From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, and Merry Christmas to all of you. I hope you are going to enjoy your next couple days of the holiday. We sure will, because we're going to be with you later on tonight. Angels and Miracles with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and here is what's happening. While in Peterson Air Force Base, Colorado, hundreds of volunteers are tracking Santa's Christmas Eve flight around the world and relaying his status to the kids excited for a visit from good old St. Nick. NORAD annually stages the tracking effort on behalf of kids all across planet Earth, taking calls from children who just want to know if they've been naughty or nice and whether they're on the list or not. Last year, NORAD took more than 134,000 calls over 23 hours. This year is no different. The phones are ringing constantly in the command center as volunteers remind kids to be thankful, to stay asleep tonight no matter what they hear, and to do their very best to stay on the nice list all year. Right now, Santa, by the way, is over Central America. He has already given out 6,482,135,000 gifts all around good old planet Earth. And in a moment, we're going up close to the North Pole with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. My, oh my, oh my, he's going to give us a report on Santa Claus. Well, they waited for more than 36 years. Now the Americans who were held hostage at the U.S. Embassy in Iran and their families will receive financial compensation for their ordeal because of a little notice part of a budget bill passed last week by Congress. It was included in that. Each person or their estate will get $4.4 million. 17 of the hostages have since died since that episode. The U.S. Embassy in Beijing said it has received information of possible terror threats against Westerners visiting a very popular shopping area of the city on or around Christmas Day. The message said that the U.S. citizens were being urged to exercise heightened vigilance, and the U.S. government personnel have been similarly guided. At least 14 people killed in three states across the South after a strong system of storms tore through just as the final preparations for Christmas celebrations were underway. I mean, my gosh, you're preparing for Christmas and then severe storms come by, 14 people dead all of a sudden. Unseasonably warm weather helped spawn twisters from Arkansas to Michigan. A Minnesota woman took a page out of Mike Tyson's playbook after she bit off her husband's ear during an argument. Jamie Elrod, 37 years old, faces a first-degree assault charge. Her husband has not been identified except by the initials JDE in the documents. The couple apparently had been out drinking, and it said that Elrod had a hairy buffalo drink, and she gets out of hand when she has those. I guess so. Retailers are struggling to meet even modest forecasts of the holiday shopping season this year after the Super Saturday before Christmas failed to live up to its nickname, according to industry research groups. Michael Shedlock with us. Mish, I think people are shopping online. I think sales are probably high total, but the online people, they're the ones that are doing it. And Nathan, I need you to punch up line one, please.
Oh, my gosh, yes. George, am I on?
Yep, you sure are.
UPS reported on Tuesday double normal traffic volume. Overall, for the entire season, traffic is up 10.5%. I've got my own anecdote here if you would like to listen to that. I ordered four packages at the last minute. Excuse me, four items at the last minute, all from the same store, George. All from the same store, all of the same type. They came in morning, afternoon. So these stores are trying to compete with Amazon's free delivery. And here, they didn't even manage to bundle these things up. And all these things were placed in the same order, George. So, but let me back off first, because I need to say something. Merry Christmas to you and all of your staff. You put on a phenomenal show every day. Here we are, Christmas Eve, and you're putting on a show. The listeners love you. If I can get in one more comment, George, I think we're going to see the mother of all layoffs coming up in January. It won't be out until the February report. I think sales are down, manufacturing is weakening, and I think we're going to see huge, huge layoffs. So enjoy Christmas right now. George, pass that message on.
You got that right. Let's go to a next incredible story here. More lives could be saved if doctors considered giving blood pressure drugs to all patients at high risk of heart disease, even if their blood pressures are normal, according to a study. The report calls for a move away from current guidelines, which recommend pills only be prescribed if blood pressure is above a certain threshold there. A non-traditional nativity scene at the Texas State Capitol featuring George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and the Statue of Liberty standing over the Bill of Rights, taken down and deemed a mockery of Christianity by the state's governor there. Santa can turn off his headlights. Why? Because the moon will be very full on Christmas. Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hey, Stephen, what's going on?
Hey, Merry Christmas, George, to you, the staff, and all the listeners. But we have the magic of Christmas here, and we have something to enhance it, George. We talked about it last week, but here it is, the beauty of the full moon. A full moon, George, that we haven't seen on Christmas Day since 1977. And think back, folks, big Star Wars fans. That's when Luke Skywalker first flew across the silver screen in the first Star Wars movie and episode there. But here's the interesting facts about it. We're getting reports, George, all over the country, and this happens during the winter, not only the beautiful, full, cold, long night Christmas moon, but we're hearing reports about high-altitude circular halos. They're called 22-degree lunar halos. Nothing to worry about, just beautiful if you have a camera out there, and if you've gotten into your goodie bag before Santa, you know, told you to open it, check it, you know, take a shot of the moon, because many parts of the country are seeing this gigantic halo caused by ice clouds. But, George, right now the moon is some 235,000 miles away. It's amazing. If you take a look in binoculars in a telescope, let's think back to 1968 when the Apollo 8 crew of Bill Anders, Jim Lovell, and Frank Borman made that most fascinating journey as they orbited the moon for the first time. We go back in history, but we'll not see another one of these beautiful full Christmas full moons until the year 2034. And think about how close or far the moon is. My final comment on this Christmas morning for all of us. If you drove, George, at 75 miles an hour, 24 hours a day, ouch, it would take us 130 days just to get to the moon. And that's only 235,000 miles away. Enjoy it. Merry Christmas. And we'll see you on the other side.
You got it, Stephen. Thank you. And you have a great one as well. Now let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center as we continue to track Santa all around the planet. Now, Peter, how close are you to the North Pole anyway?
Yeah, well, the real North Pole, the geographic North Pole, is many hundreds of miles north of me, but I'm in North Pole, Alaska. And let me begin by saying good evening and a Merry Christmas to you, your staff, and to the Coast audience.
Thank you, Peter.
I'm up in the city of North Pole on the east side of Fairbanks, where it's slated to be about minus 27 degrees tonight, so it's going to get pretty nippy up here. And as you know, I've made a number of UFO reports from unusual and far-flung locations, but I suspect a UFO report from the city of North Pole on Christmas Eve may represent a first in all of ufology.
Yes, it is. We are making broadcast history tonight.
Actually, I'm not far from Santa Claus residence and workshop, so I and my good friends here are keeping a sharp eye out for any unusual activities over in that direction. We'll let you know if anything happens. And I've been away from the UFO Center for about 3 days, but we updated the website 2 days ago, I think, thanks to a devoted and dedicated webmaster. We posted about 60 new reports. There are a lot of really interesting ones among them. Some daytime sightings that the readers might enjoy, some sightings of large triangular craft again, and sightings of these peculiar red and orange lights that I've been babbling about now for so many years. But just a second, George. I think we may have breaking news here.
Uh-huh.
The porch light over at Santa's residence just went on, and the front door is swinging over. Yes, sir, this is the real thing, George. There's the very gentleman himself in a red suit, relaxed fit. He's got white cuffs and a black belt, and he looks and acts as though he's just awakened from a long winter's nap.
He's fast. I just had him over Central America.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, there he is.
All right, Peter, you got a lot to talk with him about.
Yeah, I sure do. And now the workshop doors are opening, and the elves are pushing out a little red sleigh. And, oh, my golly, George, look at all those bags against the distant wall. I don't know how they're going to get those bags in that little sleigh. That's going to be quite a challenge. And here come the reindeer. Elves are leading out the reindeer towards the sleigh. Yeah, that sounds to me like it must be Prancer. Well, there you have it, George.
I love it, Peter.
I dispute the claims that Santa's already over the lower 48. It must be an ersatz Santa Claus.
We've got a couple of them.
We've got the real thing up here, and he lifted off at about 10:20 p.m. Pacific time. I recommend people down in the lower 48 keep their eyes open, and if they want updates, I recommend they look under their tree in the morning. So with that, I'll sign off by saying, and here's my group of volunteers,
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
You got it. Thanks, Peter. Appreciate it. You know the song Scarlet Ribbons, very popular song. The music was written by Evelyn Danzig, the lyrics by Jack Siegel. It was written in only 15 minutes in 1949. The song tells of a miraculous tale of a father who hears his little girl pray before she goes to bed.
I peeked in to say good night, then I heard my child in prayer, and for me some scarlet ribbons for my hair. All the stores were closed and shuttered, all the streets were dark and bare. In our town, no scarlet ribbons, not one ribbon for her hair. Through the night, my heart was aching. Just before the dawn was breaking, I peeked in, and on her bed in gay profusion lying there, lovely scarlet ribbons for her hair. If I live to be a hundred, I will never ribbons for her.
Welcome back to Coast, and thank you for joining us on our Christmas Eve special. And, of course, we'll be live tomorrow night on our Christmas Day night show as well. We've got a special guest for you tonight for the next couple hours. Special for a couple reasons. One, he's a dear friend of ours, and two, he's a phenomenal guest. And, of course, hosts his own program called Unknown Country at unknowncountry.com. Whitley Strieber is a very prolific author of many best-selling novels and works of nonfiction and fiction. Four movies have been made from his books, and some of his novels, of course, The Wolfen, The Hunger. He's working on The Alien Hunter, of course. Sci-Fi is going to develop it as a TV series, which will air soon. And I want to bring him on and talk with him about something personal as well. Whitley, Merry Christmas, my friend.
Merry Christmas to you, George, and to everybody.
I just want to say this is tough for me.
Keep going, George.
Because I know what you went through.
I know you do.
But our condolences on the death of Ann.
Yeah, I know, and you've had that same thing happened in your family just recently, too.
Yeah.
Well, it is an agony and a suffering, but also a great joy in that Anne lived a beautiful life, and it was a life lived in and about joy. She was extremely present all the time, and we were really happy, and I still am, because I have that life within me now.
She's looking down on us right now.
I wouldn't say necessarily down. She might be a little closer than that. Part of the reason that grief is another form of love, and you can hear somebody say that, but you can't know it until you're living it. And I'm living it, and we felt, the two of us, that the barrier between the living and the dead was not necessarily so real because of the experiences that we had in our life together, and that the close encounter experiences I had, some of them were phenomenal, and we'll talk about them over the course of the evening. And there was one other person in the world who knew them, from personal experience, and that was Anne. So she didn't die with the thought that maybe this is it, maybe there's nothing there, because she'd seen some glimpses of what is there. But I lived with what is there for months at different points in my life. I had one foot in this world and one foot in that world. And, the anguish of the situation is, I can only tell you, but unless you have lived it, you can't know it. And how I wish I could somehow magically enable everybody to have experiences like the ones we did, and primarily I did, and had a few, but enough, but I can't do that. So all I can do is describe what it was. And what it is since Anne has passed away, we've established a relationship, and I've learned extraordinary things from her.
Let's talk about some of those things, Whitley, when we come back in just a moment. Whitley Strieber, our special Christmas Eve guest for the next couple hours tonight, right here on Coast to Coast. We're going to be talking about this very special bond that he has with his wife, Anne. And, of course, we're going to talk about some of his work, including The Alien Hunter. So make sure you're part of that. We're going to come right back in just a moment on our Christmas Eve special right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.
Hi, this is ufologist Chase Klitsky, wishing you all the hope, wonder, and joy that this season can bring. May it last throughout the new year. Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you, Chase. Welcome back. Whitley Strieber with us. So, Whitley, tell us about this special bond that has now developed between you and Ann. And how did this all evolve? I mean, obviously the relationship in life ties into in the past, afterlife.
Well, it first of all, it's greatly helped by the fact that I know that the physical world is embedded in a much larger conscious world because I've been there. I've witnessed it and experienced it personally. And that helps a lot because there's no unsureness. In a sense, I'm a little bit like a psychic. I guess maybe I am now sort of one because of knowing this and knowing it experientially in my life. During our life together, one of the things that happened early on when we were getting, after I had written Communion and we were getting thousands and thousands of letters, Anne was the kind of person who could read very quickly, and she was really organized, and we were getting these letters literally in huge mailbags.
Oh my God, it's like a miracle on 34th Street. They show up in big bags, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, they were bringing the mail up in these bags, and she had a secretary. She also had a real sixth sense about people, and one of the letters was from a woman called Laurie Barnes, who turned out to live just half a block away. And Anne said, this is this lady who was describing her experiences. I think she's a secretary. I'm going to call her. And she called her, and Laurie said, why, yes, I have been a secretary for a long time in my life. She'd done a lot of things. She was a singer and actress and all kinds of different things, but she was a very good secretary as well. So here she came, and they became a team, and they were working together on the letters. And one day, Anne came into my office from hers, and she said, Whitley, this has something to do with what we call death and the close encounter experience, I mean. And, of course, this was just heresy to the UFO community. Oh, God, boy, did they ever not want to hear that. They didn't have much truck with anything I was saying, but that was the end. I mean, this was not about anything like that. This was about UFOs from other planets filled with scientists or fairly creepy scientists, whatever you want it to be. But it certainly didn't have anything to do with anything that was outside of the secular reality of science. And yet it did. Oh, yes, it did. And we had, well, I'll give you an example. We started to have a lot of letters of just the most beautiful, extraordinary letters about what was happening really to people, that how their dead friends and relatives were showing up in the context of these close encounter experiences, as had happened to me on the first night in 1985. One of the beings who was surrounding me was a man I recognized from college, who was telling me all kinds of things about the then very secret stealth aircraft. And I don't know anything about airplane manifold or exhaust manifolds or anything like that. And I was listening to this, and afterwards, one of my early thoughts was, it was a crime that this guy was the only person I recognized. So I tracked him down, and to my astonishment and chillingly, I discovered that he'd been dead for like 9 months when the event took place. In other words, I was sitting there talking to a dead man.
Whoa.
Yeah, who looked and acted just exactly like a living person. So, okay, I filed that away. But then she's saying that this is happening more and more. Then my agency, William Morris Agency, telephoned me and said, Whitley, there's a man trying desperately to get you on the phone, and we think you should call him back. And of course, you know, anyone in those days, there's no internet, so anyone who can even find the agency is really working. And so I call the guy, and he says, Mr. Strieber, I've read Communion, and I want to tell you a story, and I want to know if this has happened to anybody else. He said this, my dog was asleep in the living room. He had just been out, he's an old dog, sound asleep on the hearth with my wife and myself there. Our little boy was asleep upstairs, our seven-year-old. And suddenly the dog became very restless, and my wife took him out. And as she opened the front door, she saw a ball of light disappearing over the trees, and he was an FAA man, and she said, there's a burning plane going down in flames. You're going to get a call in a few minutes. At that moment, their little boy came running downstairs and said, Mommy, Daddy, little blue men have brought Joy, his older brother, into my room, and he said to tell you he was all right.
Oh, my God.
And it turned out that the reason the man said, I want to know if anything like this has ever happened to anyone else, because our older boy died in an auto accident a week ago. And I said, I was so grateful to Annie in that moment because of all the work she'd done. And I said, yes, it's commonplace. People experience the presence of the dead in the presence of the visitors. And we go into this, by the way, there's another book we didn't talk about yet. We're going to talk about On Coast in February.
That's right.
It's called Supernatural. I wrote with my colleague, Jeff Kripal of Rice University. And we'll get into this more there then. But in any case, the guy was so grateful to hear this. And there were so many of these stories. And then at our cabin, we had a man who was the editor of a big magazine who said, well, I'll come to your cabin. If they show up, I'll put it on the front page of the magazine. So we had him there with people Ann picked, because she, as I said, she had a sixth sense about this. And she said, we'll bring so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. These people, they will show up for these people. And up everyone came. So the living room's got four or five people sleeping in it. Ann and I are upstairs. In the basement, there's a couple sleeping privately, a married couple. And the visitors proceed to show up in the living room. The people in the living room, of course, are all wide awake. I mean, who'd be sleeping on a night like that, right?
Right, exactly.
And they're wide awake. And the visitors, these dark figures, begin jumping around, as one of them put it, like the Brothers Karamazov, jumping around in the room. Everybody can talk and hear each other, but they can't move. No one can move. So they're all talking. Are you seeing this? Yes, I am. Look at that. Can you see its face? No, I can't. It's just, et cetera, and so forth. So they have this experience in the night. Then in the morning, the people from the basement come up and say, in the middle of the night, they woke up to see a friend of theirs standing at the foot of the bed and saying, well, she was all right. And she wanted them to know she was all right. She had died in an earthquake in Mexico City a couple of years before. So it even happened right in the context of our cabin. Of course, the magazine editor, realizing that it would be the end of his career, didn't write the story. he was scared too, because I guess he wanted to continue to eat, but I can't blame him for that. But still, it was very disappointing that he did not.
Have you come up with reasons why this is, why this connection occurs?
Yeah, I think that especially these little blue figures that are so well known in the Close Encounter experience, and our experience of them goes back into history so far. They've always been with us. in one form or another. And I think they are the arbiters of the soul. And another story about them, with, and I think they are us also. Lori Barnes again. Lori was asleep in bed back in the 50s. And she's wakes up. She's her husband is out working at night. And she wakes up and she sees these terrible looking little blue figures standing beside the bed who have come silently into the room. She's pregnant at the time. And she's horrified. And she starts to scream. And one of them puts his hand out and she stops. And he says, "Do not be afraid. We're not here for you. We're interested in the girl child you're carrying," as if that would make her calm down. And of course, in 1955 or whenever it was, you couldn't tell whether it was a boy or a girl. You had no idea. Turned out to be a girl, and she turned into a lovely woman who doesn't seem to have anything connected with this at all. But in any case, then he puts his hand, gloved, dark blue gloved hand on her hand and says, one day, my dear, you will look just like us. Wow. And I think that's a tremendous clue. I think the idea that this has to do with aliens, that at a certain level of reality, that doesn't even mean anything anymore. There are no aliens. There's no distance. There are no separate planets millions of years apart. It's a whole different, wonder-filled, amazing world. And all of us have a chance, one way or another, to be part of it. Anne said that, she said that what we have, what is left of us, is the love that we make in this world. And I think that that is exactly correct, that if we live lives that are full of love, then there's a lot of us left when we die.
No doubt.
And what if we have very little love? She said, here's from her aunt's diary. This was written back in 2004, right after her brain, she had a brain bleed back then and nearly.
Boy, what a fighter all these years.
Oh, she was not afraid and she fought. But when it was over, Anne was absolutely ready.
Yeah.
She was not afraid at all. Never for a moment. And when she said to me, she said, "Honey, I'm dying," and of course I was just it was a catastrophe for me, as you can imagine. But I determined that during that time, those days, that I would not give her anything except love and support.
Mm-hmm. And you did.
Yeah. She saw plenty of grief too, and that was good. And she said, I said, "I'm so sorry I keep bursting into tears and crying. I can't help it." And she said, "Honey, what would my life have been worth if nobody grieved for me?"
She was stronger than both of us put together, Whitley.
She was plenty strong. She had enormous, and she was also a teacher from the very to her core, and even after death, we had assumed Annie would be cremated, and because this is consistent with her desires, she said, "You know, I don't want that. I want to give my body to the hospital because my brain, whatever's happened to it, is so unusual," and it was very unusual. It was a very unusual situation, so I ended up having to donate her body to medical science, which is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. But I thought to myself, there she is, even in death, using her body as a tool for teaching. And this is what she loved, and this was what she believed in. So there was that was an in her dying. I don't know if Trish and Rob McGregor have been on Coast. They probably have from time to time. They're a lovely couple, and they've been on Dreamland a fair amount over mm-hmm. the years. They talk about they're experts in synchronicity, and they're lots and lots of fun to be with, and we always enjoy having them on the show. And really liked them, and thought they were very bright and fun. And this is what happened was. The Trish was corresponding with a friend the next morning after Anne had died about Anne's passing, and she was typing the letters, a letter out, typing the words, "Thank you for letting us know." And at the moment she typed the word "no," as Trish wrote me, a brilliant flash of light and a huge explosion filled their house. They thought the house had blown up. Jeez. They didn't know what had happened, but there was nothing had happened. And she said in her
energy,
blog,
a light of energy or something.
We think it was Anne making her presence known
in a big way.
Other things that happened the night Annie died, about 2 hours later, a friend called who is something of a psychic. She did not know Anne had died. And she said to me, "Whitley, I just had the feeling I needed to call you. Anne wanted me to call you."
Jeez.
And then she paused and she said, "Has Anne died?" I said, "Yes, she died a couple of hours ago." And
that really is remarkable.
Then a couple days later, we'd gone to the, we were up out in the desert, and we'd gone up to the mountains to Idlewild here in California. And I was sitting on a bench alone, and I had been crying and crying and crying during this period.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, "Oh, Annie," I was talking to her, I just wish you were here. I wish I could touch you because I know you're still there, but I can't feel you physically. And it's just so hard. I wish, could you please give me something? Suddenly my cell phone rang. And I answered, it was William Henry's lovely wife, Claire.
Yeah.
Herself very angelic. You've probably talked to her. Yeah, she's a lovely person. And she said, "Whitley, it's Claire. I just had the feeling that I needed to call you tell you Anne is very close to you right now." That was the second time that happened in a few days.
It is so energetic. Whitley, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and chat more with you. And you've got to tell us about this upcoming TV series of your series, The Alien Hunter. This is exciting. It's going to be on Sci-Fi. Whitley Strieber with us. We'll take a few calls, too, if we have time on Coast to Coast AM.